Wednesday, June 17, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit of a different outlook on the world of sports than you're going to get anywhere else. If you want some different insight, if you want some sarcasm, you want to look at the world of sports with a little bit of a sense of humor, then you just found your new podcast. You can subscribe in a number of places. Anywhere where you find podcasts, you can pretty much find us. Subscribe on iTunes. Subscribe on Podcast Republic. A lot of different places that you can find the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. Would love to have you join us every single week. If you want to contact me, there's a few places that you can reach out to me, and I have had a few of you reach out to me, a lot of different questions, some insights, some suggestions on maybe some things to put into the show. I really, really do appreciate that feedback. If you want to contact me, you can find me on Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. Same thing for Facebook. If you want to go over to our website, put up some new articles, we have some polls, we have a couple different things that you can check out over there. Yes, a lot of it is satirical, but some of it you're going to really, really enjoy. You want to check it out? DailyDoseSports.wordpress.com. That is the site you can go check us out at. You want to email me? Had a few people email me, ask me some questions. We're going to have an email show coming up in the next few weeks, and all it's going to be is me reading your emails. If you would like to contribute to that, I am looking for some good emails still. You can send it to me, DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. Send us whatever you got. Do you need some advice? Do you got a question? Do you have a suggestion? Whatever you have, I would be glad to help you out like we do here on The Dose. This week, obviously got to talk a little bit about the NBA Finals. Going to talk some NHL Stanley Cup Final. That finished up this week as well. We've got a crazy story coming out in Major League Baseball that I want to talk about. And as usual, you want to stick around for our Daily Dose Top 5. You don't want to miss that this week. It is NBA Finals flavored, and I want you to stick around for that one. Of course, the big news coming out, Golden State Warriors last night closed out the Cleveland Cavaliers in 6 games. Andre Iguodala was named the MVP of the NBA Finals. First player to garner those honors without starting every game. He came off the bench for a good portion of the series. We're going to talk a little bit about who should have been the MVP. Should it have been Iguodala? Should it have been somebody else? I have somebody else that's not even on the list that should have probably been the MVP. Going to talk about that here in a little bit. You know, we've got some interesting stories coming out in the world of sports. Did you see that San Diego Chargers veteran safety Eric Weddle is having some issues with the San Diego Chargers? You know, he's reporting for the mandatory minicamps on this past week, but there's kind of some issues with his contract, and apparently the team is kind of saying, well, this is all on Weddle's side. We're doing all we can to get him in, but he's not holding up his end of the bargain. Weddle, after minicamp, after you know, they did their minicamp, he came out with a prepared statement. And kind of said, it's obvious that I'm not a part of this organization's long-term plan. The NFL is a business, and I can accept that. I just wish the organization had been up front with me from day one. He said that contrary to what the Chargers are releasing, they're coming out and saying, we're discussing contract figures, and Weddle is kind of balking at the number that we're putting out there. Weddle says they haven't discussed contract figures. He says that they aren't really speaking at all. And that the Chargers are being less than honest with him. Uh-oh, that's not good. Want to keep an eye on this. Eric Weddle, you know, he's kind of one of those guys that you look at and you say, how has he made it this long? I don't know if he has an overabundance of skills, but he's kind of a scrappy player that has managed to hang on. Let's keep an eye and see if the Chargers can manage to get him in. The U.S. Women's World Cup team won last night. They beat Nigeria 1-0. And finish out first place in Group D in the Women's World Cup. Abby Wambach scored the winning goal. It was her 14th World Cup goal, putting her even for second all time, just behind Brazil's Marta, who has 15. Wambach, you know, she hasn't been great. The U.S. team has not been great in these. And yes, I'm going to admit it. I've watched some of these games. I have. My daughter's playing soccer. I've watched a little bit of it. But you know, they're not playing great offensively, but they're playing pretty good defensively, and they have, yes, she's nuts, but they have a pretty good goaltender back there. And that makes everything you do just a little bit easier. When you know we can gamble, we can take some chances, we can be aggressive, and we know we have Hope Solo back there. And not only will she stop your shot, She might punch you in the face too. It's pretty good insurance you have back there. The win sends the United States through as the leader of its group for the sixth time in the past seven Women's World Cups. The team will now head to Edmonton and Alberta for the first match of the knockout stage, which will begin on Monday. They don't have an opponent just yet, but that will be coming. We'll keep an eye on that. I've got some bad news for the lady listeners to the Daily Dose. I know we actually do. We have quite a few lady listeners that really like the Daily Dose. I've got some bad news for you. Apparently, it looks like Dale Earnhardt Jr. is off the market, ladies. He got engaged this past week to his longtime girlfriend. And you know, you look at that and you hear that and you're like, first question, why? But he's been with this girl for a long time, Amy Ryman, and they are now engaged. Says he's looking forward to spending the rest of his life with this amazing girl. And you know all the happy sappy stuff that you say when you're in that situation. Dale, do me a favor. Just go ahead and start separating your stuff in half for when this goes sideways, and you're going to need to do that. I've heard, and I don't know this for a fact, but I've heard that they are registered at AutoZone. We will also keep an eye on that. You might not have seen this story. There's a story coming out that I just heard a little bit about. Backup quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, Ryan Griffin, apparently got into some sort of a scuffle in a New Orleans bar and was hit with a champagne bottle, needed 50 stitches in his head. Ryan Griffin takes 50 stitches to the head. I guess there's still some investigation as to, you know, what happened and who threw what and who started this and where all this is going, if there's going to be criminal proceedings in all this. I know this. I know this for a fact. I know who didn't throw that bottle. Johnny Manziel was nowhere near that bottle because it wouldn't have hit anything if he would have been the guy throw it. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the NHL Stanley Cup, because the Chicago Blackhawks won their third Stanley Cup in 6 years on Monday night, which made a lot of the true Blackhawks fans happy. They love that team back there. That is a team that if you are a Chicago person and you are around that team and you've grown up with that team, there is a ton of passion for Chicago sports. That is a great, great sports town. It also made a lot of bandwagon fans really happy too. Because, like I said last week, the Blackhawks have kind of turned into that team that just seems like they are kind of becoming the Cowboys or the Lakers or the Yankees. They're kind of becoming that of the NHL. The only difference is that in the NHL, honestly, we don't care enough about it to really hate on teams that win all the time. So we're just like, oh yeah, Blackhawks, well, I don't know, whatever. We don't really pay as much attention to it as we would if it was like an NFL team. You get an NFL team that wins all the time, you know, the Patriots or someone like that, we start to hate them. With the NHL, we're like, I don't really care that much. It doesn't really matter to me. But be sure to ask that guy in your office this week that is sporting his brand new Blackhawks jersey. You know, on Friday, you know, when you do Friday, like jeans, casual day, whatever it is, and you can wear a jersey if you want or a Hawaiian shirt. Make sure that guy that comes in wearing that Blackhawks jersey, and you never even knew he's a hockey fan. Like he doesn't watch it. He's not really about it. That's not really what he does. Be sure to ask him, who his favorite player, was growing up. You know, who's your favorite Blackhawks player growing up? Because he's probably going to be like, oh man. Oh, so many of them. I gotta think about that. Patrick Kane? No. I mean growing up. I don't mean in the last, you know, 5 years. I mean like growing up. Who is your? Oh man, I don't know. Walter Payton? I don't know. Here's the thing. If you are truly a Blackhawks fan, you really are a Blackhawks fan, then it would kind of stand to reason, I would think, that you're also a Cubs fan, right? And a Bears fan. Right? So now these so-called Blackhawks fan, you know, it's a little bit different because now, you know, the season's over. Now who are you cheering for? You big Cubs fan now? Cause I know some legitimate Blackhawks fan and they're like, yeah, I am a Cubs fan and I suffer through it every year. You can't just adopt these teams from different cities and say, oh, now that's my favorite team. Oh yeah. Kentucky. Yeah, they're my favorite team in college basketball. Oh yeah, oh yeah. My favorite team in football there—that's Ohio State. You can't just jump around. Pick a team and stick with your team. Now, I have a word of caution for Blackhawks fans. And you should be living large this week. You should be feeling great this week. What they've done and what Joel Quenneville does. And let's not forget, Joel Quenneville was in Colorado coaching the Colorado Avalanche. And we were like, nah, we can do better than that. We can do better than that. We can go get somebody better, and got rid of him. Thanks. But Quenneville and what they've done with Kane and Taze and that group is phenomenal. But here is just a little bit of a word of caution. You're about to have 12 free agents this offseason. And not some of them are lesser names, but I mean, guys like Brent Seabrook, Andrew Shaw, you're going to have some people. And here's the problem. Because when you look at these situations, you say, are the Blackhawks a dynasty? And I guess in the modern salary cap era, we look at them and we say, well, yeah, they're a dynasty. I mean, at 3 championships, 6 years, that qualifies these days as a dynasty. You're not going to have these dynasties like we used to have, like 3 in a row and 4 in a row and you know, UCLA 10 in a row. That's not going to happen anymore. There's too much parity. We've evened the playing field too much. And so you can't just have one team dominate year after year after year after year. But you have these salary cap dynasties now, and they are a little bit different. You know, you have teams like the Patriots who have won, you know, some scattered Super Bowls throughout different years. And you say, yeah, they're kind of a dynasty. It's not the dynasty maybe that we traditionally think of. You know, it's not the Yankees of like, I don't know, the 40s or 50s or whatever, but you have a dynasty now. But the problem with the dynasties now is you have these guys come up for free agency, which is what the Blackhawks are going to face. And see, the thing is, guys want to get paid. They want to capitalize on the success that they've had. One of the greatest teams that I personally ever have seen in my life, one of the greatest teams was the Chicago Bears in 85. Another Chicago team. But they only won it one time. And the reason is because, hey, eventually these guys want to get paid. And so you had guys splitting, going their own ways, having their own agendas. We already won. So what the Blackhawks have done in this time of salary cap structure and all that is absolutely incredible. Ton of credit to that group and that franchise for the job that they've done, being able to win as much as they have. It's going to be tougher now. It's going to be even tougher now. So let's keep an eye and see, can the Blackhawks overcome this stuff yet again? Because you've got a bunch of free agents and they're all going to want to get paid because they were all a big part of this, right? And as a result, they're going to want a pretty hefty paycheck for it. You know, speaking of the Patriots, well, not really speaking of the Patriots, speaking of cheating, we have a weird story coming out in Major League Baseball. And you know, if you are a Chicago fan, Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup, you've got to be just ecstatic. But then the very next day, this story comes out in Major League Baseball. Chicago fans have to feel like it's Christmas right now. Like they just woke up and they opened a, what? Look at all the presents. And here's the first present. Oh, we won a Stanley Cup. That's amazing. And then they open another present. And apparently their arch rival, if you really are a Cubs fan, the St. Louis Cardinals, is in some big trouble. And I mean big trouble. Huge trouble. Not trouble like what we might think of normally. Bigger than that. So the St. Louis Cardinals, a team that conventionally does things the right way. This is a Midwest, good old-fashioned, wholesome team. Is being investigated. Not by Major League Baseball. No. If it was Major League Baseball, we'd be like, oh yeah, okay, you know what, were they corking their bats? Were they deflating baseballs? No. By the FBI. Apparently, they're being investigated for hacking into networks and trying to steal information from the Houston Astros. And you know, this investigation started last year when some proprietary information was posted anonymously online. And there's a report now in the New York Times that says the FBI has evidence that Cardinals officials hacked into the Houston Astros database and had access to stats, scouting reports, internal discussions about players, about trades. Oh, this has a huge, huge reach here. This is something big. According to the Times report, Cardinals officials gained access by using a list of passwords associated with Astros GM Jeff Lunau, who was formerly in the office with the Cardinals. So they have some history with Lunau. He was working up there, and he apparently they just figured, well, let's try his passwords and see if they work. And they were working, and they were getting into the Astros database. Now, first off, what were the passwords that he was using? I mean, was he using my dog's name? I'll just use my dog. Yeah, Lassie, and then my favorite number. Was he using his birthday? Or was he just lazy and was just like, you know what? I don't got time to be thinking. Just leave it password. You know, when you're at your office and they're like, hey, right now your password's set at password, but make sure you change it. Maybe he was just like, you know what? I got stuff to do. I got to try to revive this Houston Astros team that has a history of being awful. I'm just going to leave it password. I ain't got time for that stuff. I'm not changing it. So maybe he just left. I don't know. But here's the problem. If these allegations are true, and this is all still coming out, this isn't a done deal. This is bigger than Deflategate. This is bigger than Spygate. This is I don't know. Maybe Watergate. This is huge because this is manipulation to try to gain a competitive advantage. And it's kind of like, I don't want to compare it completely to Deflategate, but remember when we talked about Deflategate and we were saying there are more long-reaching repercussions from deflating the footballs than just could Tom Brady throw the ball better? What if you weren't fumbling as often? How far back did this go? How many games did you maybe have a one touchdown game that you somehow eked out because you held onto the ball a little better than the other team? This has bigger implications than that does, because did you benefit in the draft? Were you getting better pitching prospects because you knew what was out there? Take a look. The Cardinals' ERA, 167, best in the league. Next closest is 179. Cardinals pitchers were only through 569 innings, whereas the next closest was 577. They have some big-time advantages in some of these departments. Were they getting it by hacking? Were they getting it by cheating? I don't know. I mean, maybe it's all just a crazy coincidence, and they had it. But I look at it kind of like the steroids era. If you didn't need it, then why'd you do it? This isn't something small. If you didn't need it, why'd you do it? Well, we didn't need it. You're going to probably start hearing that in the next few weeks. You're going to hear Cardinals fans. You're going to hear Cardinals management. You're going to hear those officials say, we went in there. We had this access, but it was kind of accidental. We didn't need any of this stuff. Okay, then why'd you do it? Why would you put yourself out there that way? And maybe you were benefiting from Luhnow, who by all accounts is pretty good, or maybe it was just a coincidence. Maybe it's just I don't know. We're gonna see where this all goes. But if they are found guilty, and I will say this: if you are found guilty, Cardinals officials, you should be fined. You should be fired. You may need to be Pete Rose or something, because this is huge. This is completely and entirely manipulating the competitive advantage. And you cannot have that. You cannot have that. If you want to get into that situation, then we're kind of just cheating on everything. I don't know. I want to keep an eye on where this goes. Here's the thing. Remember this. You're going to hear more and more about this scandal coming out. It's not Major League Baseball that's investigating it. It's not like just a fine and a suspension. You're talking about the FBI and not that clown at the frat party wearing the female body inspector shirt. You're talking about the Federal Bureau of Investigation. You could be looking at guys going to jail. This is corporate espionage. This isn't just, oh yeah, we looked over there and we were kind of, stealing their signs. You're not allowed to hack into other businesses, records like that and get their information. This is illegal. You could be talking jail time. Pretty serious stuff. Hey, did you notice this past week that Albert Pujols passed Mickey Mantle in home runs? Pujols now has 539 home runs in his career. And next up is Mike Schmidt at 548. He'll probably get that. He has a chance to get that this year, maybe next year. But you probably didn't notice that, did you? Of course you didn't. Because we don't care about baseball numbers anymore. We don't care. Remember, we used to have baseball numbers that really mattered. Like, there were certain numbers that were just kind of the holy grail of baseball numbers. We had Roger Maris, 61 home runs in a season. You had Hank Aaron, 714 career home runs. Name one baseball record that matters now. Name one that you're like, oh man, if they ever reach this, I can't even name one. I don't even know. Because we don't care. It's all tainted. All the steroid era, and you can say, well, yeah, but you know, the steroid era might have been bad. And I will go on record. I have gone on record before. I'll say it before. I'll say it again. I think you should mandate steroids in Major League Baseball. I want these guys juiced. I want them gigantic. I want them looking like Mark McGuire, like a cartoon character. You go out and just start yakking the ball over the fence. That's fine with me. I don't have any issue with that. But do something to liven up this game. Give me some reason to watch. At least I was kind of watching it. But you've made all the records completely irrelevant. Nobody even cares. Nobody even pays attention to the numbers. Nobody even pays. That was the one thing baseball kind of had. Because you don't have those records in other sports. You don't have those numbers in other sports. You don't have this magical, well, you know, if so-and-so in the NFL rushes for this many yards, or so-and-so throws for this many, you don't have that. You don't have that in basketball. There's not like this majestic number that you used to have that in baseball. You don't have it anymore. It's completely, completely gone. Speaking of meaningless records, locally here in Denver, Colorado Rockies pitcher Jorge De La Rosa became the winningest pitcher in Colorado Rockies history, in franchise history. I know what you're saying right now. I know what you just said. You said, who? Yeah. De La Rosa won his 73rd game as a Rocky and passed Aaron Cook in the Colorado Rockies record book, which is a lot like being, I don't know, the winningest quarterback in like Detroit Lions history or something. I mean, who cares? No one's even paying attention. No one even cares 1 ounce about any of it. That's how bad the Colorado Rockies are. 73 wins. All-time winningest. Aaron Cook, again, you're probably saying, who? I have no idea who that even is. That's what we have here. Major League Baseball. We have it so good in football here in the Mile High City. We have it so good. We have one of the best franchises in all of sports. And I know it doesn't always get that recognition because it does still have that little bit of a small town thing. We have one of the best franchises in professional sports, you know, right now with the Broncos. We just have that with the ownership. For the other sports, it's not nearly as good. Let's shift over to the NBA. And before we get to the NBA finals, I want to talk a couple of moves that we saw take place this week. Because the Los Angeles Clippers made a trade that was at least a little bit significant. They trade Spencer Hawes and Matt Barnes to the Charlotte Hornets for the ear blower Lance Stephenson. And now, there's a couple of things that you're going to look and you're going to hear a lot of people talk about. The biggest problem with the Clippers this year, and the biggest reason that they didn't go as far as I think a lot of people thought, they didn't have any depth. They didn't have any depth. I don't know that this gets them any more depth. In fact, I think this probably hurts their depth a tiny bit. So I don't know if that helps. But you're going to have a lot of people saying, that's a bad trade. It's not a bad trade. It's not a bad trade. It's a good fit. It is a good fit. You get Lance Stephenson, who, you know, famously or infamously, however you want to say it, blew in LeBron's ear in the finals a couple years ago. But it is a better fit than what people think it is. It's a much better fit. You're going to hear, you know, the big media outlets and stuff say this is a bad fit, this is a bad trade, it's a bad deal. That's not the case. Because believe me, if anyone knows about blowing in the playoffs, it is the Los Angeles Clippers. The Denver Nuggets finally got themselves a head coach. It's only been, what, like 3 months? Way to go. They sign former Sacramento Kings coach Mike Malone. Mike Malone was also with Golden State back under Mark Jackson when Mark Jackson was there. And they say, I don't know how much this is true, they say that Malone was kind of the brains behind the operation. If you listen to Mark Jackson do the broadcast, I don't know if he strikes me as the highest IQ in the room. They say that Mike Malone might have been the brains there. But here's the strange thing about this whole hiring thing. And there's a couple directions to go on this. For one, you had George Karl. George Karl is, say whatever you want about it. He doesn't win the big one. He doesn't get it done in the postseason. Sixth winningest coach in NBA history. In history, sixth winningest coach. Now, he was with the Nuggets. Malone was with the Kings. We basically traded. Because now they have George Karl, we have Mike Malone. Mike Malone has 39 career victories in his entire career. George Karl took the Denver Nuggets. Let me repeat this. George Karl took the Denver Nuggets to the playoffs all 8 seasons that he was here in Denver. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? 8 seasons with this garbage franchise, you got them to the playoffs 8 times? Not only should he not have been fired, they should have named like a street after him and changed the Pepsi Center to the Karl Center if you can get this horrible franchise to the playoffs ever. Now, here in Denver, and I realize we have listeners all over. We have listeners in California. We have listeners out on the East Coast. We have listeners down south. We have listeners in Texas. We have listeners overseas. We have listeners everywhere. Here in Denver, and if you're not here, I apologize. Yes, we are a national show. We play to everyone. We talk about all different sports. We have a little bit of a Denver flavor. We are hearing here locally, oh man, the Nuggets, they might have got a steal. Mike Malone's a pretty good coach. And he does have some redeeming qualities. A pretty good defensive coach. He is going to bring some discipline in that I believe this franchise is sorely lacking. Because I think when you look at the best players on the team, and you look at the Ty Lawsons, and you look at the Manimals and guys like that, I think they're a little bit spoiled and they kind of just do whatever they want. Don't forget what they did under Brian Shaw. They did exactly what they felt like doing. And if they wanted to tank and get Shaw fired, that's what they did. I do think they need some of the discipline and some of the defensive habits that I think Mike Malone's going to bring. But don't fall into this trap that the local media is telling us about, well, we might have really got a good coach. Well, then let me ask you this. Why wasn't he on anyone else's list? How come we didn't hear about the Bulls wanting him? How come we didn't hear about the Orlando Magic wanting him? They took Scott Skiles. Scott Skiles wasn't on anybody's list. They didn't seem to want him. The New Orleans Pelicans didn't take him. They didn't even have him on their list. I don't even think they interviewed him. No one else wanted him. This has nothing to do with getting a steal. This has to do with, one, who else would want this godforsaken job? And two, who would do it for cheap? That's what this had to do with. Nothing else. The Nuggets probably would have stuck with the interim, the coach that they had named, Melvin Hunt. But he probably had the nerve to ask for a raise. That's the only reason that he didn't get the job. Here's one thing, and people that aren't local, and even the local people here, you don't grasp the concept. This franchise is one of the worst franchises in sports. The Denver Nuggets, historically, are one of the worst franchises in sports. You might not think so, but it's absolutely true. When you think of the worst franchises, think of the worst franchises in all sports. I mean, and you think of, you know, maybe some expansion teams or just teams that have never had success. You think of teams like the Cubs. You think of teams like the Clippers. I got news for you. They're a heck of a lot closer to getting it done than the Nuggets ever are. Ever. It's been like 36 years since the Nuggets advanced past like the second round of the playoffs or something. They've never competed for a title. One of the longest stretches in all of professional sports, never competed for a title, ever. This is one of the worst. Here is a sure sign of how bad the Nuggets are. They're so bad that when you talk about the worst franchises in sports, you forget to even talk about them. That's how bad the Denver Nuggets are. That is surely, surely a sign that this is one of the worst franchises in sports. Let's jump into those NBA finals. Like I said before, NBA finals finish up last night. Little bit disappointed, to be honest. You know, we get to this time of year, and you kind of just want, I want to extend the playoffs and the finals as long as we can. I really was hoping for a game 7 in both the NHL and the NBA, but you know, they both go 6 games. Hey, I told you last week, and at the time, Golden State was down 2-1. I told you last week I would stay with my pick of Golden State in 6 games. Just throwing that out there. But remember, I'd said in game 3, when the Warriors got beat, I said I thought I saw a light click on, and it kind of looks like it did. Not only for the players, but for the coaching staff of the Warriors as well. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. Let me ask you a question. Who should have been the most valuable player? Who should have been the most valuable player? Andre Iguodala was named the MVP. You know, like I said before, first player to get the MVP without starting every game. Also the first time that the finals MVP has been on the same team as the regular season MVP since Magic Johnson, who won it in 1980 with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was the regular season MVP. So since back to 1980, this is the first time that had happened. You know, it's interesting because Iguodala had been a starter for a long, long, long time. Throughout the league, with Philadelphia, here in Denver, then in Golden State. But this season, Steve Kerr asked him to come off the bench. And I can tell you this, as a former coach, a guy that will come off the bench gives you so, it is so huge because it helps you so much. Not only does it sometimes change a little bit of the chemistry of the team, because maybe you have a guy, you know, starting that wouldn't start normally, and you've got some positive energy coming out. You've got some unselfishness. You've got guys looking at Iguodala saying, wow, he's taking a step back because he thinks it's better for the team. Not only does it do all those chemistry type things, but it physically does some things, because when he came in off the bench, it gives you energy. It gives you scoring punch. It gives you defensive capabilities that you didn't have otherwise. It just strengthens your team so much to have a guy that is that unselfish and is able to do that. Gets the MVP. And I want to talk a little bit about this. Do you realize this? Iguodala and LeBron James, the only two players that got votes. Only two players that got votes? Really? Really? Steph Curry didn't get a single vote? We're going to talk about this. Got to talk about this. Didn't get a single vote. This is where, and I've told you before, I guess I'm part of the media now. I mean, writing, I'm doing podcasts, doing this kind of stuff. I'm not a media guy. I guess I'm media-ish. But this is where the sports media, they don't get it. They don't get it. I don't know if you haven't been around the game enough. You watch it from the stands, but you haven't been involved in the game enough. You don't understand the game enough. You don't get it. If you voted for Iguodala and LeBron James and Steph Curry didn't get a single vote, you don't understand basketball well enough. You just don't. Let's look at this real quick. Andre Iguodala, in the series against Cleveland, 16.3 points a game, 5.8 rebounds a game, 4 assists per game, and defended LeBron James. And I'm going to say defended LeBron James in quotation marks, because LeBron put up, 36 points a game. I love what Iguodala did. My biggest problem that I've ever had with Andre Iguodala, you know, aside from the fact that he can't shoot free throws very well, don't forget he was in Denver for a few seasons. We got to see him quite a bit. My biggest problem with Andre Iguodala is, did you ever notice he finds himself open on the perimeter a lot? And I'm okay with that. But if he catches it and he's wide open and he kind of stands and he looks and he takes it, should I shoot this? Should I shoot this? And then he shoots it. It's never going in. It's not going in. If he catches it in rhythm, he's moving a little bit. He's coming off a screen and catches it and he's open outside and he shoots that within rhythm. He's a pretty good shooter. But otherwise, sometimes what shooters don't grasp is when you're left open in those situations, the ball skips and you're just standing there and you catch it and they don't come out at you, you're open for a reason. You're open because they know you're going to miss it. You have to do something else with it. You got to put it on the floor. You've got to swing it to the other side. You've got to go move and get yourself open. But what you don't want to do is stand there for five seconds and think about it and then decide, oh yeah, I think I'll shoot it. Because whenever Iguodala does that, he never makes it. Go back and look at the film. He doesn't make those wide, wide open shots. He makes them when he's in rhythm. He makes them when he's coming off, gets his feet set, but it's all within the rhythm of the offense. He's pretty good with that. If he's wide open, not going to happen. Defended LeBron James, I guess sort of. Should LeBron James have been the MVP? I mean, between him and Iguodala, they got all the votes. I've got someone who I think should have been the MVP, didn't get a single vote, and it's not Steph Curry. I think there's someone else out there, really, really valuable. Should LeBron James have gotten it? I mean, you look at LeBron James, best player in the series. He was the best player in the series, but was he the most valuable player in the series? Let's take a look at his numbers. 35.8 points per game, 13.3 rebounds per game, 3.4 assists per game, Oh, no, I'm sorry. 8.8 assists per game. 3.4 was his turnovers per game. Probably shouldn't bring that up. Here's the one problem. Here's the one problem I have with LeBron. Your 35.8 points per game came on 32 shots per game. Man, you're chucking up a lot of shots. That is Kobe-ish. That is Iverson-ish. 32 shots to get 36 points? That's a lot of shots. That's a ton of shots. Now, was LeBron valuable to the Cavaliers? Yes. Was he the most valuable player? No. You were really, really valuable in all those losses. You were so valuable that you lost four games. The thing is, this isn't a single elimination game. This is a seven-game series. This is a best of seven. You have your opportunities. And no, I don't feel bad for LeBron. Well, he just didn't have any help. I don't care. He chose to go there. Nobody twisted his arm to go there. And I realize it's a little bit different this year because he had the injury situation. He had those kind of things. But you chose to go to Cleveland. You made that decision. And the reason you chose to go to Cleveland was because the cupboard had gotten pretty bare down in Miami. So I don't feel bad for you. You don't just get to jump around and say, well, I'm going to go to this team now, and I'm going to go to this team now. And, oh, well, hey, all these guys got hurt. I don't care. You know, you only get so many chances at this thing. You only get so many chances at winning a ring and getting to these NBA finals. I don't. Once you get there and you say, well, it was just all the injuries, well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, here's a thought, and I'm just throwing this out there. Michael Jordan, people talk about, well, you know, by the end of everything, Michael Jordan had surrounded himself with a lot of talent. Yeah, he had. And do you know why he had? Because he was the fifth highest paid player on the Chicago Bulls. The fifth highest. He took less money so he could make sure Pippen got paid. He took less money so he could make sure they could bring in Dennis Rodman. He took less money so he could make sure they got Tony Kukoc and get some of his role players a little more money. He took less money. You can do the same thing, LeBron. You can bring in a couple more guys. Just don't have them max out your contract. So I don't feel bad about that. You jumped to Miami, and you took a big bunch of money down there, and you had an all-star team down there. I mean, here's the thing I want you to think about. He was in Miami, and he lost two finals there too. So now we have LeBron James 2-4 in the finals. And here's another thing I want you to think about. The guy that he is guarding in those finals has won three finals MVPs. I'm not saying LeBron can't defend anybody. I'm not saying he's a bad defender. I'm just saying that's kind of a weird coincidence, isn't it? The guy that he is defending in those finals, three of them have won finals MVP. I mean, he wasn't on Nowitzki the entire time, but you were with Nowitzki. He wasn't on Kawhi Leonard the entire time, but quite a bit of the time. Andre Iguodala and him were matched up pretty much for most of the series. There's three MVP winners. I get LeBron James' value in defeat. I understand that. Didn't have any help. I look at that roster, didn't have any help. They didn't have the depth. The guys that he does have, you know, not guys you can count on in that type of series. And I don't think that this series hurts LeBron James' legacy, because everyone's going to look at it and say, well, yeah, but he just lost all those people. If they had Kevin Love, if they had Kyrie Irving, it would have been a different series. I've heard some pretty big names in the sports media world saying if he has Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, this isn't even a close series. Slow down. Neither one of those guys are great defenders. This might have been a completely different series. If you get into a shootout with Golden State, I got news for you. You're going to get beat. So I don't know if that would have changed anything. But here is my problem. And maybe we just have to look at LeBron James in a little bit different of a light. Maybe instead of looking him as this, hey, he's better than Jordan. I think we can put that stuff to rest. I think safely we can kind of put that stuff to bed, because that we clearly don't have that situation. Jordan went six times, won all six, never even got to an elimination game. LeBron has been six times, has only won two, and has kind of collapsed in elimination games. Hasn't looked real great in elimination games. Didn't look real good last night in an elimination game. Maybe LeBron is a really, really good loser. And I know that sounds bad. I know you're sitting there going, wait a second. I know that sounds bad. I'm saying he's really, really good, but he's on the losing side. I'm saying a little bit he's a loser, but I'm not saying he's a loser. I'm just saying he's a really good player that just happens to be on the losing team more time. Here's the problem. Last night, he deferred most of the time. And let's be real clear. He quit. He quit last night. Minute 54 left in the game. Steph Curry gets the outlet, comes flying down the floor, looking to get to the basket, looking to kill time, looking to add some more. And LeBron literally stood there and watched him do a layup. Game's not over. Somehow, J.R. Smith was still scrapping and trying to find a way to win. And I realize, I know, J.R. Smith's a little bit of a stat padder. He seems to put up those big shots and knock down those shots when the game is no longer in the balance. And to be fair, he probably had no idea what the score was or even what game they were in because he's J.R. Smith. So I understand some of that. But J.R. Smith wasn't quitting. Why wasn't LeBron James jumping over and making sure to not let Steph Curry get to the basket and lay in an easy layup? He just stood there and watched him. He was in the paint and he turned around and went, oh, yeah, game's over. I don't care. He quit. Spin that however you want. A lot of people saying LeBron James should have been the MVP. He got votes from the media. Best player, so he must be the MVP because he's the best player in the series, except that no. That's not the case. I can't just sit there and say best player equals MVP. Let's say you have stock in like Apple. But the stock you have is a great stock. Oh man, I have Apple stock. It's really good. I bought it low. It's really good stock, but it's hemorrhaging money. And every time I'm losing money, I'm losing. Is it that valuable of a stock? No, it's not. Let's a little different example. Remember just a couple years ago when the Denver Broncos faced the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl 43? Who's the greatest player probably in that game? It's probably Peyton Manning. But you lost. You're not the MVP. And I realize he had a bad game. That's not the case here with LeBron. LeBron had a very, very good statistical series without much help. But let's say Peyton puts up 5 touchdowns and they still get blown out. So it's still 56-35. You're not the MVP. I realize best player, but you're not the MVP. Because you only have value if you're winning. Value is winning. He's really, really valuable. No, he was so valuable in our losses. He was really, without him, we really lose. That's not value. So I don't want to hear about LeBron James really was the most valuable player. Well, yeah, he's really valuable in those losses, I guess. Let's look at in here. If you want to name it and you want to change the name of the award to the most outstanding player, then yes, give it to LeBron. He was easily the most outstanding player in the series. But he wasn't the most valuable. Steph Curry. You know, we talked a little bit. Andre Iguodala wins the most valuable player. 16.3 per game. 6 rebounds a game. 4 assists per game. Steph Curry. 26 points per game. 5 rebounds per game. 6 assists per game. How on earth did Steph Curry not win the MVP? This reeks a little bit of some kind of spitefulness. By the media, by the sports media, by the voters, and these are media guys that vote this award. This reeks a little bit of me, for some reason, and I don't know what the reason was, for some reason, they didn't like Steph Curry. I don't know if it's because he chews on his mouthpiece like a pacifier. I don't know what it was, but there was something about Steph Curry that they didn't like because you don't get it. Here's the thing about Steph Curry, and this is what I was saying earlier when I said the sports media guys, you haven't been in the game enough. You haven't maybe you've watched it from the stands. It's a different thing when you're down on the floor and you're either coaching it or you're playing it. It's very, very different because this is where people get it wrong. See, when you're the Cleveland Cavaliers, all of your eyes are on Steph Curry. Andre Iguodala, I'm not nearly as worried about him. Yes, I don't want him attacking the hoop, and I don't want to just give him penetration. I don't want to let him catch things in rhythm and shoot, but I'm not worried about Andre Iguodala. I'm worried about Steph Curry, because how many times did we see him go pick and roll, beat the trap, and make the pass. Not necessarily the assist. As good as his assist numbers were, he had 6.3 assists per game. But how many times did he make the pass that led to the pass that led to the score? That's the thing that people don't understand. He sees the floor so well and he handles the ball so well that even though he wasn't the guy that got the assist necessarily, although he did quite a bit, even though he might not have been the guy that hit the shot, although he did quite a bit, he was the most valuable player because he made the pass that led to it. When you look at guys like Andre Iguodala, how many of his points, of his 16 points per game, came directly from Steph Curry? A bunch. Same thing with Klay Thompson. Same thing with Draymond Green. It all came from Steph Curry. He was the guy that was controlling this game. And I'll tell you right now, he was the guy that Cleveland said, he's the guy that's going to kill us. He's the guy we have to watch. He's the one that we have to be concerned about. Because not only will he kill us with his shooting, which he did in spots, and a couple games really went off, but he hurts you in other ways. He hurts you with his ball handling, he hurts you with his IQ, and he hurts you with his passing. And that's what killed him. Why he didn't get votes for the MVP, like I said, there's something going on there. There's something funky there. I don't know exactly what that is. Steph Curry on the floor, MVP. My real MVP, I'm going to give you who I believe should have got the MVP award and didn't get a single vote, isn't going to be talked about. No one's going to mention him. But the guy that should get the MVP for the Golden State Warriors completely changed this series. Completely changed this series. I want you to think of some of these players. Harrison Barnes. Didn't show up early, but really came on late. Festus Ezeli had a huge game last night. Really, that putback dunk, I thought, kind of just broke the backs of the Cleveland Cavaliers and their fans. Draymond Green. Sean Livingston. Klay Thompson. David Lee. Who, by the way, took over for Bogut and kind of made us forget that Andrew Bogut was even on the team. I'm watching the celebration last night, and you know, they're going to the podium, and they're talking to Iguodala, and they're talking to Steph, and I'm seeing Andrew Bogut back there, and I'm like, oh yeah, you're still on the team. I forgot about you. All of these guys I just mentioned owe one person a huge, huge thank you. Golden State Warriors head consultant since 2011. Best personnel guy in the business, and it's not even close. Jerry West. Jerry West is the most valuable player of this series. He put these pieces together. Do not underestimate the value that he had to the Golden State Warriors. And I want you to think about this because it's not just the Warriors that he's done this with. We know the success that Jerry West had with the Los Angeles Lakers. And the amazing job that he did with there. I mean, bringing in Shaquille, bringing in Kobe Bryant. You basically traded Vlade Divac for Kobe Bryant. Are you kidding me? But not only did he do it with the Lakers, because let's be honest, there's a lot of people who have had success with the Lakers. He went to Memphis and had success there. You know how they're at least not, they're not the Nuggets. They're a respected organization. That's from Jerry West. And he went in to the Warriors, who have a history of mediocrity. I mean, their claim to fame, maybe 40 years ago with Rick Barry. But since then, their claim to fame is like, you know, the Hardaway, Mullen, Mitch Richmond. They had nothing. Manute Bol there for a while. I mean, Golden State was just mediocre. Mediocre. Every single year. And somehow, Jerry West came in and rebuilt this team. Remember, in the offseason, he said he would quit. He would be done if they traded Klay Thompson for Kevin Love. Doesn't he look like a genius now? Jerry West is really, really undervalued. Everywhere he goes, the man wins. Unbelievable. unbelievable kind of career that he's had. The logo, just amazing. And people don't go back and YouTube some of his playing days. My goodness, what a phenomenal player. You want to talk about a scorer. But what he has done in the front office of now three different organizations should not be undervalued. Give Steve Kerr a lot of credit. Rookie head coach, and I think a guy that, if you know a little bit of his background with his father and what happened when he was a kid at Arizona and that kind of stuff, his playing career, getting the most out of his playing career that he did with, you know, not a lot of skill set from the standpoint of athleticism and that kind of thing, he deserves a lot of credit. He outcoached David Blatt. And LeBron James, who really is probably the coach, you know, he decided in that game three, we're going to go small, and we're not going to match up with you very well at the one end, but we're going to be faster than you are, and you're not going to be able to match up with us either. And you might beat us inside, you might have Mozgov go for 25, you might have Mozgov go for 28, but he's going to have to step out and guard some people. And we're going to wear you out because you have to chase us. You know, at the beginning of game four, and I thought game four was the most pivotal game in this series. When they won game four, I said, yeah, the series is over. And I realized it was only 2-2, but I said, this game is over. Early on, if you'll remember in game four, and that was the game that LeBron flung himself up into the crowd and smashed his head into the camera. Remember that? Right after we had talked about him being a drama, whatever. But that was the game. One of the first timeouts of the game, Steve Kerr has gone with his smaller lineup. He's gone with these smaller guys. And I mean, his starting lineup was going 6'3", 6'6", 6'7", and 6'8". I mean, not big guys. Against Cleveland, who was going, you know, with 6'8", 6'9", and 7'1", you had some, you know, a definite size advantage. In the first timeout of that game four, I heard Steve Kerr say to his guys, hey, it's okay, we're down now, but they're going to get tired. They're going to get tired because they're going to have to chase us. And he was absolutely right. They defended the size with speed. And you saw even last night, did Mozgov hurt them inside? Sure he did. Did he have to really work hard to hurt them inside? Yeah, because you had a lot of guys slapping at the ball and getting it low. And maybe they couldn't compete with him size-wise, but speed-wise, they were like gnats flying around him. And he had to work really, really hard. And when big guys start to get tired, they start to foul. And we started to see that late last night. Mozgov ran out of gas. LeBron ran out of gas. I think the entire Cavs team that was on the floor just kind of ran out of gas and didn't have anything left. Give Steve Kerr a lot of credit for that. He trusted his system, and his depth got some great contributions from his bench. Are the Golden State Warriors a great team? No, probably not. I don't think we're going to look at this team and say, man, that's one of the all-time greats. No, they're probably not. They don't have much of a presence inside. They're sometimes a little too cute with the basketball. Sometimes they will have too many turnovers, and they can be their own worst enemy at times. And sometimes they pass up easy gimme shots for sometimes lower percentage shots, and they don't always hit them. When they're hot, they're very, very good. Is this one of the greats all time? No, not really. But hey, they got it. They got it done. And a lot of credit to Steve Kerr and the members of that team. As we do every single week, we bring to you our Daily Dose Top 5. And the top five, you never know where it's going to go. Sometimes we look back historically at things. Sometimes we look forward at things that are coming. Sometimes we just look at some random items that are out there. This week, our Daily Dose Top 5, and you're going to have to think back about this. Remember back in like game one, game two, game three of this series? There was one guy in this series that was getting all of the love, and I mean all of the love. The media loved him. The people in Cleveland loved him. The most popular guy in this series was Cavaliers point guard Matthew Dellavedova. Everybody fell in love with him. I mean, they were talking about, oh man, he's shutting down Steph Curry. He's just such a scrapper. He's doing all these amazing things. Everybody was in love with Matthew Dellavedova. From the media to the fans, I mean, there were these little spots on ESPN about what a job he is doing. And our Daily Dose Top 5 this week is going to be the top 5 reasons that everyone fell in love with Matthew Dellavedova. And they might not be what you think. They might be a little different than what you think. So I want you just to think back just a couple games ago, because we saw that kind of went away. We saw Dellavedova eventually, the cream rises to the top, and we kind of saw him start to go away. But I just want to just show you why everybody fell in love with him. Because the reasons, like I said, might be a little different thing. Number five on our list, why everyone fell in love with Dellavedova. It's a blue-collar town. Cleveland is a blue-collar town, and they have an appreciation for a blue-collar guy. These are guys, you know, that go to work every day, and this is kind of a tough town. I mean, Cleveland is that way. And so they have a respect for the hard work that he does. And let's be honest, he doesn't have a huge skill set. It's not like this is the most athletic guy in the world. He's getting by on you know, a lot of coaches I've heard that he's got a lot of sand on him. He's a pretty gritty player. I don't know if he's very good, but he's pretty gritty. And I think it plays well in a town like Cleveland where they look at him and say, well, he doesn't have all the skills, but man, he works hard. Something to be said for that. One of the reasons people fell in love with him. Number four on our list of why people fell in love with Matthew Dellavedova. He doesn't look like a player. I mean, let's be real honest. He's got those heavy legs. He kind of looks like Teen Wolf. You know, he looks like the owners were coming in and there was a guy outside in like a jean jacket and a flannel shirt and drinking a Natty Light. And they were like, hey, dude, we got a spot tonight. You want to start? And, well, yeah, I'll start. And so he doesn't look the part. And for the idea that, you know, here's a guy that he doesn't look like he even belongs out there. And somehow he's making plays. He's contributing and he's helping them win a little bit. There is something to be said for that. I think a lot of people fell in love with that aspect of Matthew Dellavedova. Here's a guy that he doesn't even look like he belongs there. And somehow he's got a jersey and he's playing and he's getting some things done. I think that was one of the reasons people kind of fell in love with him. Number three on our list, why people fell in love with Matthew Dellavedova, is he was helping them win. He was doing that dirty work, the diving for loose balls, the getting the scrappy rebounds. There were even a couple games in those first two or three games. He even made a couple shots. And granted, that's one of the ugliest shots I've seen. It looks like he is shot putting the basketball. A couple of them went in. Maybe they were like bank threes. But I realized that started to go away gradually over time. But initially, he was helping them have some success. And there was definitely an appreciation for that from the media and the fans. Number two, and a lot of people aren't going to want to talk about this, but I do think that there was some appreciation for this. I think there was a feeling, especially among Cleveland fans, he might just take out their best player. So number two on our list is maybe he'll just knock out Steph Curry. Maybe he'll dive into his legs. Hey, he's knocked out. He took Al Horford out. He took Kyle Korver out. Maybe he'll just take Steph Curry out. Maybe he'll take Klay Thompson out. Maybe he'll take out Draymond Green. There was a little bit of a feeling that maybe Matthew Dellavedova, hey, it's Cleveland. It's not like they're above charity right now. If you sat there and said, hey, you're going to win a championship, but in order to do it, you're going to have to shred Steph Curry's knee. Yeah, do it. Done. I don't care. They will take whatever they can get. It's Cleveland. And so the fact that Dellavedova might take out your best player, yeah, okay, well, that's the breaks. Again, blue-collar town, toughness. If our guy takes out your guy, too bad for you. Now, we get down to the number one reason why Cleveland fans, fans across the world, the United States, of course down in Australia, the media, sports media fell in love with Matthew Dellavedova. And I think, to be real honest, I think this is the number one reason people fell in love with him across America. I'm gonna channel my inner Oprah for this. The number one reason people fell in love with Matthew Dellavedova. He's white! Let's be real clear. If Matthew Dellavedova looked like Allen Iverson or like Delonte West, nobody would have said a peep about him. They could have cared less how scrappy and blue-collar he was. They liked the fact that they had a little white guy to cheer for. Let's be real honest. Next week on the show, you know, the NBA has changed a lot. Just in the last 5, 10, 15 years. Next week, I want to tell you why the NBA has changed so much. And not only am I going to tell you why they've changed, I'm going to give you a player that caused the change. And trust me on this, it's not who you think it is. Next week, we're going to keep an eye on the Major League Baseball story coming out about the Cardinals. See where that goes. NFL mini camps have wrapped up, and we'll start looking at the NFL getting into next season. And you know, next week, what we have, we've got the NBA draft preview. You want to make sure you catch the NBA draft preview. Plus, we're we're going to hand out some NBA postseason awards. We didn't get a chance to get to that today, but you know, we do some regular season awards. Next week, we got to hand out some NBA postseason awards. I'll give out my MVP. I'll give out a few other awards that I think people in the postseason, playoffs all the way through the finals, are deserving of. You know how we do. We give out some awards. As I've told you before, be sure you subscribe. Get the podcast every single week. You don't want to miss an episode. Go check us out on dailydosesports.wordpress.com. If you want to contact me, feel free. dailydosesports@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. As always, have to thank JSP. Could not do this without you. Thank you for so much of your support. Just want to thank everybody. I hope you have a great week. I will see you all next week. Have a great week, everybody.